let's get started then. We are on the bottom of Ayin Hey Amud Beis, 75b. We are at the Braisa, which we actually started reading last time. But we'll go back to the beginning of that Braisa again. It is the third wide line on Ayin Hey Amud Beis, and I will share it on the screen here. Go. Okay, hopefully it's showing up on everyone's screens. We have it? Okay. So, this is a discussion of what happens if you didn't kosher or didn't tovel the piece of kitchen equipment that you got from someone who wasn't Jewish, and you used it to prepare food. So this is going to take us back into the discussion that we had a while back on Tam Lifgam, as a brief discussion, defective tastes. And it's also going to bring us into some procedural questions about how we tovel and kosher equipment. If you have the source sheet, then there's an easy to use table at the top that explains the cases that we're about to see. We are again on the third wide line, Ayin Hey Amud Beis, 75b. Tana Rabbanan. Halokeach Klei Tashmish Mina Ovdei Kochavim. If you acquire what's called clay tashmish, which literally just means usable utensils, but it means food utensils, that's what we're talking about, from someone who isn't Jewish, devarim shelo nishtamesh bahen, so if they're brand new, they've never been used, matbilon vehein tahorin, so dip them in the mikvah, and that's it, they're usable. We use the word tahor, which is the word that the Chumash used as well, but don't get confused, it means that it's kosher, you're able to use it for food. What if they were used, but only for cold things? Kigon, kosos, kitova, kitonios, utslochios, cups and pitchers of different kinds. Madichon, so you rinse them. Umat bilan, and then you take them to mikvah, vahim taharin, and then they are fine for use. Dvarim shenishtamish ben al yidei chamin. If they were used with hot, meaning hot liquid, so that's another story. Kigon, for example, ha-yoros are vats, ha-kumkumusin, kettles, mecham, and things that you use to heat up hot liquids, mag-ilon, then you do ha-gala, you boil up hot water in them, and all the surfaces are exposed to the hot water, umat bilon, and you take them to the mikvah, behim taharin, and then they're usable. Finally, devarim shenishtamish ben ayidei ha'ur, that which was used in fire, kigon, hashvudin vayeskalos, like if we're talking about a spit that you would use in something that you're roasting, malavnan, then you do libun first, you get them white hot, umat bilan, you take them to mikvah v'hein tahorin, and they are shahor. All of that we said at the end last time. V'chulan shenishtamish bahen ad shlo yadbil v'shelo yagil v'shelo yilabin. For all of these different types of equipment, if you use them before you tovel them, or before you do hagala, or before you do libun, whatever the treatment is that was required to make this vessel usable, if you didn't do that, and instead you just used the utensil to prepare food, tani chada asur, v'tanya idach mutter, I have two different views. View number one says the food is prohibited. View number two says the food is permitted. And as the Gemara goes on to explain, this is a debate about what is called nosein tam lifgam. Nosein tam lifgam, you will recall, means with where there is a taste that is infused into the food, but the taste is defective. The idea is this, for those who don't remember, we had this big discussion about it on Daf Samach Zayin to Samach Tes. In the event that I cook non-kosher food in a pot, and I don't clean the pot, so that it actually has physical pieces of the non-kosher food, and then I cook kosher food in it, it doesn't matter whether it's the same day, a day later, a week later, a month later, in all of those cases, the food that I now cook in that utensil is treif. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. However, if you cleaned it so that the only presence of non-kosher food is whatever was absorbed in the walls of the utensil, in the event that a day goes by, Now, that food that was absorbed is said to have a defective taste. We talked about back on Samach Zayin to Samach Tes. We talked about the question of whether it has to be like an awful taste or just not a good taste. What if it's a bad taste in combination with other things but not on its own? We had all these different permutations and iterations of it at that stage. But right now, what we're saying is that that in the event that the absorption was there for a day before the utensil was now used, the first view in the Braisa says, doesn't matter, your food is still prohibited. The second view says, no, your food is permitted. And the reason why your food is permitted is because this taste that has passed one day is now a negative taste. It's a defective taste. Are we clear? We understand what the Gemara is doing? Okay. So I'm going to share with you from the source sheet. I brought you there from the Shulchan Aruch just to show you how we paskin on this issue. It's the first source on the sheet. Shulchan Aruch writes, Stam klei ovde gelulim heim b'chezka she'enam b'nei yoman. Utensils of people who owned by people who are not Jewish are assumed by default to be what's called a non-ben yomo, meaning to not have been used that day. The assumption is that today is Sunday. In the event that the non-Jew sells me a used utensil of his, I can assume he didn't use it in the last 24 hours. Most people's kitchen equipment has lapses of 24 hours between uses. That seems to be the assumption we are making. Lefichach, therefore, ma'avar v'nishtamesh b'em kodem hechsher, if I broke the rules and used them before I could kosher them, hatav shel mutter, the food that I prepared in it is permitted because whatever taste emerged from the utensil into the food was a defective taste. And then he goes on to say, but don't get any ideas. Ava b'chein, despite this, aser lomar lo'ovik ochavim bashel li'yirakos b'kdei rascha. You might say to yourself, oh, well that's a neat heter. If that's true, that I can always assume it hasn't been used in 24 hours, then I could say to a non-Jew, forget him selling me his utensil or giving me his utensil. I could say to him about his utensil, do me a favor, cook up some vegetables for me in your pot, because I can assume that the pot hasn't been used in 24 hours. Shulchan Aruch says, no, don't do that. You can't say to him, make me some kind of dish of food. For you to say to him, cook this for me, is as though you are doing the cooking yourself. And since it's as though you are doing the cooking yourself, just like you're not allowed to cook in a non-Jew's kli, saying, well, it probably hasn't been used in 24 hours, so too, you can't tell him to do that on your behalf. So we close the door in the Shulchan Aruch on that leniency. Are we clear? We're good? Okay. You have to note, when you talk about this as well, that there are limits to the assumption that you're making about the non-Jew's utensils. Meaning, it's all well and good to say, probably hasn't been used in 24 hours. If you are aware that the cycle of his use of his kitchen equipment is a less than 24-hour cycle, you can't say, well, I can just assume it's been 24 hours. It doesn't work that way. This used to come up, Clive, from the Allentown days. When Giant Supermarket had a setup with us where they could cut vegetables to do prepared vegetable trays under Hashkacha. So you couldn't say, well, they could take a knife from anywhere in the supermarket, say the deli counter, and assume that it hasn't been used in 24 hours. It doesn't work that way. Everybody knows that supermarkets tend to have the equipment that they need in order to do the job they do. And they don't have stuff that's just lying around that doesn't get used on a daily basis. So this only works where it's logically supported. Okay, that's the idea here. Alan, you look perplexed. You're also muted, though.
Okay, we'll unmute you.
I can't unmute him.
types Alt A, it will unmute him.
Right.
Oh, he's on an iPad.
No, it's okay. It's an iPad. I need to scroll to the top. So what I don't understand is, until now we were dealing with two concepts, effectively trace. Is it trace or not, and is it tahar or tamid? So I can understand no taint tongue with God dealing with the kashrus part. But how does that get around the tamay part?
Right, so it doesn't. There's no tamay tahor piece in this discussion. Even though we've used the word tahor and tamay, that was what I was trying to note before, it doesn't mean that. It means kasher treif. There is no tuma and tahara in this conversation. Dipping it in the mikvah is not about removing tuma. Okay. So the Gemara goes a little bit further with this discussion about no Saint Tom Lefgam, because the Brisa is giving me two different views. One view saying that the food is prohibited, Tom Lefgam doesn't help, and the other one saying the food is permitted, Tom Lefgam does help. So that brings us in the Gemara to a question regarding what's actually not this coming week's Parsha, but the week after Matos Maseh, when we talk about the issue of Klei Midyan, about immersion. So the Gemara asks the question. Right. So the Gemara is wording this as though it were a question, meaning I have two views. One view says that it is prohibited, and one view says that it is permitted. So the Gemara says, lo kasha, that's not a problem, the fact that you have these two different views. Ha kemana de omar no Saint Tam Lefgam Asur, ha kemana de omar no Saint Tam Lefgam Butter. This is what I already read into the Gemara. When we say, one view says that the food you made in this utensil before koshering it is prohibited, that's within the view that no Saint Tam Lefgam doesn't work, and the other one that says it's permitted is within the view that no Saint Tam Lefgam does work. Ulamanda Amar, we're now one line up from the bottom. Ulamanda Amar no Saint Tam Lefgam Mutter. According to the view that says that the defective taste is not going to contaminate the food you cook in it, and therefore the result is mutter. Giulei ovde kochavim da asa rachmana hechi mishkachasla. He says, I don't understand. If no Saint Tam Lefgam is permitted, then why does the Torah require them to kasher the vessels from Midyan? Toveling is a separate discussion. We're not talking about toveling now. But it also required koshering. Why did you need to kosher the utensils you got from the war with Midyan? They hadn't been used in a day. So therefore, you should be able to just use them. Who requires koshering? That's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara's answer is, Amar Chia Breid de Ravuna, Lo Astra Torah Ela Kedera. We turn the page. Ayin Vav. Bas Yoma, Delav no Saint Tam Lifgamhu. The answer is, the Torah, when it said you had to kasher the vessels you got from the war with Midyan, the Torah was talking about utensils that had been used for food that day. The army ate that day. Or whatever it was that you got from people's tents had been used that day. That's what you had to kasher. So the Gemara says, well, you've only pushed the question back a step then. Mikan ve'elech lishteri. Oh, so then anything else, in fact, would be permitted. I didn't need to kosher it. I could just wait a day. Right? I don't need to kosher anything anymore. Just wait one day and I'll be fine. So the Gemara's answer is, Gezera kedera she'ena bas yoma mishum kedera bas yoma. The Gemara says, no, that's going to be a mess. If you're going to say that if it's a day-old thing, it's fine, and you just leave things until a day has passed, you're going to start to get confused about what in your kitchen has waited a day and what has not waited a day. The truth of the matter is, you could have provided a different argument. You didn't need to provide this one. We learned already way back in Samach Zayin that if you cook something that is spicy, that has a sharp taste, then even if it's been a day, nonetheless, the taste is gonna be said to contaminate your food. Nonetheless, this is the answer that the Gemara gives here, that we're worried about confusing the Kalim. So the view that says that Tam Lefgam is permitted is still going to require koshering. They haven't thrown koshering out the window. But now the Gemara goes back the other way and says, okay, fine. I understand that the view that permits isn't really going to say no more need for kashering. But what about that other view, the prohibiting view? Ve'idach, we're at the end of the third line. Ve'idach, the other view, the view that prohibits. Kedera bas yoma nami mifkam pagma. Ve'idach has a question mark, sorry. What are you going to do with the alternative view? What in the world is he going to say? The one who says that tam lifgam actually prohibits the view that says that tam lifgam is actually going to prohibit, I don't understand. Isn't it tam lifgam? Doesn't he accept the idea of tam lifgam? So the Gemara says, kedera bas yoma nami mifgam pogma. The truth of the matter is, I don't accept the idea that tam lifgam works to permit, and I will tell you that even vessels used that day may be pogum, may have a defective taste, and yet the Torah prohibits them. That proves that tam lifgam does not permit at all. Let me just remove the shared screen so I could see people as I explain it. The first view that says tam lifgam is permitted, then why does the Torah need kashering? Because of stuff that was used that day. Fine. The view that says that tam lifgam isn't going to work, that according to that view, don't you accept the idea that clay midyan only needed to be kashered because of stuff that had been used that day? He says, no, I don't accept that idea at all. The truth of the matter is there's no difference, same day and later. There's stuff that was used that day for food that still injects a negative taste. There's no distinction to be drawn. Tam lifgam is not going to permit. That's the argument that he brings, and that concludes the Gemara's discussion here at this point of tam lifgam. But I wanted to note a couple of things.
I'm not sure I felt the threat.
Okay. Which part?
Yeah. The second opinion doesn't accept tam lifgam as being making it lafila kosher. Is that the opinion?
Well, yeah, but the kosher.
One day or 2 days?
Right. No one is saying lachatchila kosher. But yes, the second view is... But yeah, the second view is saying, I don't accept that a defective taste changes anything in terms of kashrus.
Okay.
Yeah, that's his argument. So the...
Does ownership matter at all in terms of in whose possession it is? Or is that really not part of it at all?
Right, not a factor. Only as far as toveling, but not as far as kashering. Yeah. So the truth of the matter is, the argument against tam lifgam, the argument that tam lifgam, this defective taste, doesn't help you, that argument would seem to be the stronger argument. Because within the view that says tam lifgam works, right? The view that says tam lifgam means, at least after the fact, what you did was fine. We had to justify, then, why do you need to kosher the utensils in Midyan? Well, because there was stuff that was used that day. Isn't that a little bit of a bizarre read of the pasuk? The pasuk that says to me, you had to kosher what you took in the war with Midyan, said nothing about distinguishing between what was used that day and wasn't used that day. There was no such distinction in the pasuk. I see no reason to make such a distinction. We don't make such a distinction when it comes to toveling. The whole thing is very strange. If you follow, in other words, we're forcing a read on the pasuk. We're forcing the Torah to say that the utensils that you got in the war with Midyan have to be koshered when? If they were used that day. But not if they weren't used that day. The Torah never gave me any indication of that. But I think the answer to this, and the reason why we go through this, goes back to the discussion we had on Samach Zayin Amud Beis on 67b, where Rabbi Meir didn't accept much of the heter of tam lifgam, and Rabbi Shimon did accept it. Rabbi Shimon's reason for accepting tam lifgam came from a completely different pasuk, which I'm going to share on the screen for you. If you have the source sheet, it's source base. He was basing it on a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, where the Torah says, "Lo sochlu kol nevela, you shall not eat any non-kosher meat," right? Nevelo usually understand to mean that it was an animal that died through a means other than shechting. "La gera asher b'sharecha titnena v'achala," give it to the ger toshav at your gates. He's not Jewish. It doesn't mean a ger meaning someone who converted. It means somebody who is a ger toshav. He's following the seven mitzvos. "O machor l'nochri," or sell it off to someone who isn't Jewish. Those are your options for a nevela. And on that, back on 67b, Rabbi Shimon said, it's only called a nevela if somebody would actually eat it. If it has a bad taste, it's not called a nevela at all. That was really Rabbi Shimon's basis. So once Rabbi Shimon has extrapolated from Parshas Re'eh that tam lifgam is going to permit something, that it's not called a nevela if the taste is bad, then we're going to work with the story of the war with Midian to make everything fit that hypothesis. But if I were left to my own devices, and all I had was the war with Midian, I never would have assumed that the Torah's mitzvah of koshering was limited to utensils that had been used that day. It's only because Rabbi Shimon already knows that from elsewhere that I'm going to do this to the war with Midian. You follow? You're stuck with this idea from elsewhere, so I need to fit the war with Midian in. Okay. The second thing that I wanted to note for you here is a Tosfos back on 75b, and I in Hayamid B, so I'm sharing that with you now on the screen. Dealing with the question of the proper order of things, you went to an antique shop and you picked up some antique cookware, right? Cast iron pot or something along those lines. What do you do first? Kosher it or tovel it? What would you say? And why? Yeah, Jared.
I would probably kosher it first because toveling is about using it for food, and therefore there's no interference with regard to that. There's no issue with just heating it up or pouring boiling water over it. Whereas the mikvah, you have to be concerned with making something tahor that's still non-kosher. There seems to be, you're not getting the last step. I feel like it would be the last step. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's just an element of it.
Okay. Now, my natural inclination is to agree with you, is to say that, first things first, take care of koshering it, and then do the final step of taking it to the mikvah. That would have been my gut. And the truth is that the language of our Gemara supports that. Because our Brisa said, Mag'ilan u'matbilan, Melavnan u'matbilan, right? First do Agala, then Tovalit. First do Libun, then Tovalit. Our Gemara sounds like it's koshering first and then Tovaling. If you take a look at Tosfos, which I brought you here, Mag'ilan u'matbilan v'hein etzahor, and you see it here on the page, he says not necessarily, lav davga mag'il v'achar kach yadbil. Not necessarily that you do agola and then immerse it. Ela filu ma'adbil b'resha, you could take it to mikvah first. D'ach tevila eina b'shvil tuma. This immersion is not about purity and impurity. In other words, if the immersion was about purity or impurity, it has impurity from whatever food is absorbed in it, then you would say, it's like going to mikvah while holding a tamei creature in your hand. You're putting it in the mikvah while it still has non-kosher food and impure food. But he says that's not what it's about. After all, even if it was never used, it still has to be taken to mikvah. So he says you do not need to, you don't need to kosher it before you tovel it. However, I'm sorry, and he notes, I'm jumping to the end of Tosfos, V'hadi tani b'braisa mag'ilon b'reisha, didn't the braisa say, do hagala first and then tovel it? Mishum d'chamira b'pnei ha'iser, that's only because the consequences of not koshering it are more severe than the consequences of not toveling it. If you didn't tovel it and you cooked food, that's a bad thing. But if you didn't kosher it and you cooked food in it, your food is treif. Again, tam lefgam dependent. So for that reason, it mentions it in that order. But Tosfos says not necessarily. You don't necessarily have to. Yes, Jared.
Is there any consideration of a chatzitza issue?
Right, so there's no issue of chatzitza here. This is discussed by some of the Rishonim. I didn't get into it here. But I think actually the Aruch HaShulchan that I'm going to bring you on the sheet may also go into the chatzitza point. But basically, no. Chatzitza means an interruption. The non-kosher food that is absorbed in the walls does not interrupt between the utensil and the water of the mikvah because it's just absorption in the walls. Therefore it's okay. If you have physical substance, that's a different story. But that's not what we're talking about. But that's one issue that Tosfos helps us to address this the question of the order of things. The other is the question that I just hinted at in reading this Tosfos, which is, what if you used the utensil before taking it to mikvah? What's the status of the food that was made in that utensil? So there's another Tosfos that deals with this issue. It's Tosfos V'chulon, the little one at the bottom of the page here. V'chulon shenishtamesh bohen. Leman detani mutter. According to the view that says that if you used the kalim without having koshered, the food is still okay because of tam lefgam. Nakat shapir ad shelo yatbil. So it also fits that the Gemara said if you used it even before you took it to mikvah. In other words, what Tosfos is trying to say is that the view that says that if you used it without koshering it, it's still okay, also believes that if you used it without toveling it, the food is not treif. The food is not going to be treif. He does offer one possibility at the end, miu ikalamema, but you could say the gazur atu kodem hagala v'libun, that maybe there will be a decree, rabbinically, we don't want you to use these utensils before you tovel them, therefore we're going to make a decree that if you use them before toveling, the food is no good. But technically that shouldn't be true. Tosfos says, technically that shouldn't be true, the food that you make in it is actually kosher. You're not supposed to do it, you violated a prohibition by doing so, because you're using it without toveling it, but that's the food itself is kosher. So that's Tosfos on this. The Aruch HaShulchan is split in terms of the two things that Tosfos said here. The Aruch HaShulchan I brought you on the sheet, it's first Gimel on the sheet, but I'm also sharing it here on the screen, says, I agree with Tosfos on one, I disagree on the other. What do you mean? On the first point that Tosfos said, the idea that the order of things doesn't matter. So if you take a look at the second paragraph in Source Gimel, where I now am highlighting, V'chein b'kelim asurin shalakachan min ha'akum, utensils that were prohibited, that were purchased off of idolaters, and again, idolaters here just means people who are not Jewish in general. Ditzrichan agala o libun, they need kashering utvila, and they also need to be tovel. Mashma milashon hashas sham da tvila tzarech davka achara achshar. The language of the Gemara was first kasher it, then tovel it. Right, hagala first, libun first. Hiskimu kol rabosenu. All of our masters have agreed. Devadai lechatchila tzarech laasos kein. That for sure, that's what you're supposed to do. He says first you kasher it, then tovel it. However, b'di'evet afilu hitto kodem hagala v'libun mutter. B'di'evet, if you did it the other way, you're okay. So he is stronger than Tosfos in this regard. Tosfos really made it sound like there's no difference what order you do. The Aruch HaShulchan really wants you to do the koshering first. However, in terms of the second comment in Tosfos, what if you used the vessel before toveling it. So that's the first half of this line in the Aruch HaShulchan. He says, Aser lishtamish bekli kodem atvila, you're not allowed to use it before you immerse it. V'im avar vishtamish bekli velo tvila lo nesar mash nishtamish bo. But if you used it without immersing it, it's not going to prohibit whatever you made. V'yad bilenu od and tovel it next. That's the idea. Because he says, V'atam shlo nesar mash nishtamish bo, the reason why it doesn't prohibit whatever you made in it, da'afilu bekli mibliyas iser ben yomo, kishishim ishba heter betzoni lo nesar machal. He says, look, let's say I had a utensil that had actually absorbed treif in it that day, and I used it for something cold. The food would be permitted. So he says, the same thing should be true regarding toveling. The fact that the kli isn't taken to mikvah doesn't in any way mean that there's something that's going to be infused into the food from the walls of the kli. There's nothing to enter into the food from your kli. Your kli that has not yet gone to mikvah has no absorption of treif in it. So therefore he says, even if you prepared food in it, you weren't supposed to do it, but the food that you prepared is going to be okay. Clear? Are we good?
All right, is either when either the tefillah or the kashering indicate any sort of violence, any sort of ownership?
What do you mean?
That's a separate thing. In other words, if it's not yours technically, then you don't have a din, let's say, in kashering. So it's got to be yours, right?
Wait, well, I don't understand that sentence. If I want to cook food in a utensil, it needs to be kashered, whether it's my utensil or not. Only toveling depends on...
I'm going on the tefillah side.
So when you talk about toveling, toveling is only meaningful if I own it.
So that would suggest that... before I do anything, I have to assume ownership of it.
Yeah. No, well, not anything, but before toveling.
Right, so what I'm trying to just think of, if I'm kashering it, it's not necessarily mine yet.
Correct.
It means I don't have a din of tefillah.
Correct. Kashering can be done when it's still owned by the non-Jew.
Okay, so I was trying to figure out if that would suggest that one should take priority over the other.
Oh, no, only that one can happen before the other. The kashering could be done before you ever got it. The toveling could not. That's about it, right? He could decide. He's a nice guy. He says, "Yeah, I know you Jews. You have to go take it to the mikveh there. I did that for you. That's nice. It didn't do anything."
Right.
Okay. Last note that
I thought you had to if you get a utensil that's not kosher and has not been toveled, then you have to kash it before you tovel it?
So the answer seems to be no. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that we're stricter than Tosfos, and that where Tosfos says that it could really be either or, the Aruch HaShulchan says no, you're really supposed to kosher it first. But under no circumstances he's saying it will disqualify it. It's just that it was supposed to be done, you know, koshering first. That's all. The way we try to do things is that we kosher first. I will again draw the distinction and say there's a difference between cleaning and koshering. Cleaning definitely has to happen first. But in terms of just getting out whatever was absorbed in the walls, no, it will not disqualify the toveling. The other thing that I wanted to show you before we move ahead is a Rashi which shows up on Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, which the kashrus agencies know about, but only use in extreme circumstances. If you take a look at the top Rashi on Ayin Vav Amud Aleph on 76a, where it says Bas Yoma, that's been used that day. So Rashi defines what used that day means. Shebishel ba ove kochavim hayom. It means a non-Jew cooked in it today. Aval bishel ba esmol. But if he cooked in it yesterday, kvar hefig ba tamo belinas laila. Just the fact that it has gone overnight without being used already diminished or damaged the taste that is in it. such that b'shuv kishapol to b'tav shel acher einu alif gam. When it comes out in the next thing cooked in it, it's a negative taste. What Rashi has done here is he has redefined the rules for tam lifgam. Tam lifgam is not about whether it had 24 hours, but now even one night makes it lifgam. So we generally don't rely on this lahalacha. Although Rabbi Tam builds on what Rashi says here, he quotes it and he builds on it. But there's more to be said if you were to look in your Radeya Kuf Gimel. The bottom line is, this is a heter which exists in the back pocket, the possibility that even just a night may render something tam lifgam. Okay, that was just something to note. Yes, Jared.
So, we live in a world that has cooking often through the night and that kind of thing. Is Rashi saying that it is specifically the night where people go to sleep or something like that? Or is Rashi saying that it's a period of the day similar to like what we talk about with Nida, with there being, a night and a day or something.
Right, so now Rashi is talking about where it wasn't used at all during the night. If you're in their day also, they cooked through the night. Cholent is not a new invention. They didn't call it cholent, they called it chamin or whatever they called it. But they cooked things for extended times also. But I don't think what Rashi is saying is specifically because it is nighttime, but I can't prove that. Okay. So, the Gemara now, and I realize we're getting towards time, but I want to just start us on the discussion. The Gemara is going to talk about the issue of a roasting spit. So, we said that you kosher a roasting spit with libun. You have to whiten it in a fire. However, we have a different Gemara that seems to give me a different set of rules. So, sharing again on Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, we're on the fourth line. Rami le Rav Amram le Rav Sheshes. Rav Amram asks Rav Sheshes a question. Tanan, I have a Mishnah. It says, Hashfudin v'ha'askala, these spits that we're talking about, Malabnun bu'ur. Our Mishnah said, you whiten it in the fire. It's not our Mishnah, ours was a brisa, it doesn't matter. We go back to our Mishnah also. You whiten them in fire. However, this word that's in parentheses is a mistake. It shouldn't say v'atan, it should say v'atnan. I have a Mishnah gabe kudshim. I have a Mishnah regarding karbanos in Zevachim, where it says something different. Hashfud v'ha'askala mag'ilan v'chamin. That if you have a spit, if a karban was roasted on a spit, all you have to do is hagala, boil it up in water. I don't understand. Why in our discussion did we say if a non-Jew roasted food, you have to kosher the spit with libun? Whereas regarding karbanos, we say you have to kosher it only with hagalah. You don't need this libun, which is a much more drastic form of koshering. That's the Gemara's problem. So in order to answer this question, the Gemara is going to go through multiple answers here. But just to understand, the first answer the Gemara is going to bring requires that we first ask ourselves a separate question, which is, why are you koshering the spit that you used to roast the karban? The karban was 100% kosher. Why do you need to kosher it?
Worried about nosher.
So Rabbi Grossman says, we're worried about nosher. The rule is that a karban is only, you're only allowed to eat from a karban for a specific period of time. Some karbanos just that day and that night. Some karbanos you have the day, the night, and then the next day. And after that, the karban becomes nosar. It is leftovers. And unlike the leftovers we're going to be eating for dinner tomorrow night, these leftovers are actually not kosher. So what you have to do is kosher the spit in order to get rid of the carbon that is absorbed in it, because otherwise the next time you use that spit it is going to exude this absorbed nosar, these remnants, into the food that you use it with. But apparently you only need libun. So I'm just going to tell you outside the Gemara's first answer, because it's a very interesting answer and it will require some discussion. The difference is that when the non-Jew roasted meat on the spit, we assumed that he was roasting something that wasn't kosher. Whereas the carbon, at the time that you used it, that used the spit, was a valid mutter carbon. It's what we call in Aramaic, hetera bala. It swallowed, it absorbed that which was permitted. And because what it swallowed, what it absorbed, was permitted, the kashering is only, the kashering required is only hagala. We don't require libun. If it absorbs something that's treif, then you need a higher degree of kashering, you need libun. Why should I make any such distinction? So we'll come back and explain that next week, God willing. But you'll be happy to know that it brings us back to our discussion of sherry casks. So we'll get that in as well. One last alcohol reference in Maseches Avodah Zarah.
So, that implications for Bas B'Cholah.
It has absolute implications for Bas B'Cholah. Very true. Yes, Chuck.
If you waited 24 hours, why could you rely on the same presumption of Tavka? Why could you say that the spit, after 24 hours, has the same issue as a used pot that you use?
Right. And the answer is that b'di'eved, that will happen. But l'chatchila, I'm not allowed to do that.
And I was waiting until the end of the shiur to ask this question because I didn't want to defray your flow. But where does the presumption come of Tamu Gum after 24 hours? Because it may very well be that in reality, not in the halachic universe, but in the universe that deals with just regular taste, the taste may be good.
Right. So I'll refer you back to the discussions that we had on Samach Zayin to Samach Tes, because we went around and around on that one, including Jared, actually, who's smiling because he remembers that we went around and around on that one.
But where is the presumption from? Where is it?
Right, so I'd have to go back to my own notes, because honestly, I don't remember everything that we talked about, believe it or not, at that point. If it was 7 daf ago, that means it's been at least a year. And there are no recordings to go back to either, because that was the pre-Zoom days. But we went through it at the time and showed that that's the Gemara's, it's certainly the Gemara's given that this is true, and everything else operates against that framework.
And is it a given from a pasuk? Is it a given from a Gemara?
No, the only thing you had from the pasuk is what we already said here, which is that that there is such a concept of if it doesn't taste good, then it's if it's not going to taste good, then it's not called nevela at all. Fortunately, since I am on my computer, I can call up my notes there and see if there's anything quick that comes to mind. The Baitus case, the Shanay's case. I'm going to have to go through it. Yeah, I'm not going to... There were a lot of notes here. All right. Maybe I'll bring it at the beginning next time. It's a good question. Maybe I'll bring it then. All right. Thank you very much. I wish everybody a good evening and a safe week.